When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast, sponsored by Shergold Guitars. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Stick to the script.
Jay Cross.
Stick to the script.
And Matthew Knight.
Grip to the stick?
Yes, and on this week's episode, we're going to be grilling Jay on the latest Fender news from NAMM, and we're going to be finding out what Matt's top picks were from the event and taking questions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. To join the discussion, follow the links in the description of this podcast or visit facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. Now, before we get started on anything, to carry on the trend that Mark Packham introduced last week, we're going to just introduce our new Patreons for the week. So thank you very much to Michael Pratt, to Samuel Pelly, to Gear Engdahl, to Andrew Fiorella, to Stephen Hampson, David Gonan, and James McClure. Also, Ben Stevenson, thanks very much for upgrading to the next tier up.
Considering
your Patreon account.
Considering everything you do is scripted.
Yeah.
I can't believe you didn't like at least pretend to have rehearsed reading out some of those names.
Sorry,
But you know,
were a mouthful. Gear Engdahl,
Joe,
and Andrew Fiorella.
I think you should move on.
Yeah, okay, fine. Well, you know, thanks very much, everyone, for joining our Patreon wagon.
It feels like about a million years since I've been on the Guitar Nerds podcast.
Ah, yes. Well, it's only been a week that you had off, but
2 weeks.
Two weeks.
Do you have 2 weeks off?
Yeah.
No, because
Matt was on it when Jay wasn't on it.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around.
No.
Do I really leave that little of an impression?
Yeah.
Didn't you come here and podcast?
No,
well?
We remotely podcast. You're absolutely right.
We've okay. had.
So Jay's not been on it for
my
two.
House without me.
No. We left your house alone. We remoted. It was good. Our remote.
I wonder
podcasting
what that smell was then. I assumed it was you, but no, clearly not.
Well,
speak to Maddie.
Well, it is lovely to have you back on the podcast, Jay Cross.
Thanks,
and Matthew
yeah,
Knight.
It's been good. I suppose the thing is that we stopped. When did we break? When did we break up for Christmas?
Like halfway through December.
Yeah, and I've only done one in that time in about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good to be back.
No, it's lovely to
fingers
have you
crossed
back.
I can remember how to read my script.
Yes, exactly. Stick to the script. And of course, because both you, Jay and Matt, you've been away at NAMM, and me and Mark certainly last week we absolutely hammered through the NAMM news. But as we were saying on last week's episode, this has been the busiest NAMM, I mean, ever. Like easily. You know, certainly since, you know, we've been podcasting, what? this NAMM was jam-packed. There's so much stuff.
I'll tell you what, this year was very weird because Thursday, Friday, actually at the show, were very, very busy. And Saturday was pretty busy, but Saturday's normally the busiest because it's the public day. Sunday, totally dead.
Totally dead.
Really?
It was
yeah.
so weird. It was like walking around, it's like, there's no one here.
Yeah, it was really weird. I think basically everybody who used to go on the Sunday the public day.
Oh, basically, is Sunday the public
Sunday
day?
Was public. Has always been the public day.
I thought Saturday was the public
no,
day.
No, Sunday. And I think basically everyone who used to go on the Sunday or usually goes on a Sunday just found a way to get in.
Yeah, everyone's an influencer now. So.
Yeah, exactly. I think basically as long as you've got your own domain name and you can send an email from it, I think you can get a badge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think
there you go, listeners. You heard it here first.
I mean, I've got no idea. I mean, obviously, I've got no idea. I don't take care of getting a badge.
Yeah,
I have people that do that for me. But you know, I think that's what. But yeah, it was very weird. I was walking around to the point that Matty and I had a chance to actually go and see some stuff together on the Sunday.
Wow.
We both had some time off together. I mean, most of the time we spent actually just sitting outside and eating lunch. But we did go and see some stuff together. But yeah, I mean, we did eat lunch.
You seem to do quite well at actually getting to see stuff this NAMJ. Whereas Matt, you've constantly complained that you only had 10 minutes to sort of see anything.
I went
3
days without a lunch break. It was... I think I shot like 50 product videos.
We saw them. We saw at least one of them, and it was really funny.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like at that point you had given up actually trying to convey the information correctly, and you were just doing
by the last day.
Routine.
I was demoing.
Did you demo
Air?
Right. So what were you demoing? Just the Wuzza Air and the giant metal zone.
that was it. The giant metal zone is available to buy. No, we had a £500,000 piano on display.
What's that got to do with Boss?
Yeah. Roland, did it?
Well, you know, it's the same thing.
Matt's the only one who can play chopsticks. None of the rest of them can do it, so Matt had to demo that.
Absolutely.
I was covering one of our colleagues who couldn't be there, so I did a lot of demo on Wuzza Air along with a couple of my other colleagues. But yeah, I did a lot of Wuzza Air demos, and we could only really demo one pair at a time. And when there's a queue out the door of people waiting to try them, and once you've given the same 5-minute pitch over and over again,
I mean, those people should have just listened to the podcast. We gave it Gear of the Year 2019.
I know.
A proper overview of it.
But
here's some other headphones. Just listen to this while you're waiting, and then you can decide if you want to actually spend some time with them.
But I also got my first proper go on the SY1000, and our guy Austin had one of the best demos ever. If you want to hear it in full, go to the Andertons page and just find their video, "The Best Demo Ever, Winter NAMM 2020," and he's just put up he just made the best synth medley ever. That product is seriously amazing. So he did all of those.
On the point of the SY1000, and sorry if I'm stealing your thunder here, Matty, but on the Saturday and also on the Sunday, I snuck away both times.
Right.
Nick Reinhardt was doing a performance on the Boss booth.
On the SY1000.
So
amazing.
Matt, you have to talk us through the chain, but my understanding is he was using an SY1000 and two Line 6 DL4s. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
And basically, did he do it every day?
Every day. Yeah, no, every day. Yeah, he did it every day.
So
yeah,
I went down on the Saturday. So I saw Matt as he was leaving. I think I saw Matt as he was leaving on the Friday, and he just said, like, "You have to come and see Nick play tomorrow because it was amazing." So me and a couple of the other guys that I worked with went downstairs to watch him, and it really was fantastic. What he was doing was amazing, you know, making drums, the synths that he was sort of like building up, and it was a really incredible showcase of that product. Yeah. And then I went and saw him the following day, and it was even better. And it was the two performances were nothing alike. It was a true improvisation. And he played for, it was like 20 minutes. So it's like, it's perfect because it's, you know, that's how long people should play for.
Yeah.
And if you play for any longer than that, Joe, it's too long and it gets boring. Yeah. So I thought Nick did a really good job, and the whole thing sounded incredible. I especially like the sound of the drum kit being pushed down the stairs.
Yeah, I mean, we had the engineer there who designed and built it and programmed a lot of it. And I was like, "Oh, did you even think that you could make those kind of sounds out of it?" He's like, "No." He's like, totally took it above and beyond what I ever programmed it to do.
Oh, right. Wow.
So, you know, he'd programmed, like, if you hit the low E string, it did like an 808 kind of kick. And then the G did like a snare, but then he'd done the same sound on the B, but it added a bunch of reverb. So he could do like a kick, snare, and then a snare with a bunch of reverb, all just by tapping the guitar. I was just like, it's nuts. I was like, I just have to get one now.
I mean, something is expressive and I guess sort of without limitation as the SY. Is it 100 or 1,000?
1,000,
sorry. Nick Reinhardt's absolutely the right player for that, yeah, because he just doesn't think with any boundaries.
Yeah, it was amazing. But I'm hoping I'm going to get him over to the UK and take him around and get him to do that demo to a bunch of other people, because it is just a mind-blowing thing to watch.
Yeah. Was it captured on any demos, the Nick Reinhardt play?
No, because it was more like we had a bunch of live performances on the booth. That was just part of that, basically.
I recorded about 20 seconds of it. I'll show you afterwards if you want.
One guy did stand there with his phone and record the whole thing. So somewhere on the deep corner of YouTube, there probably is the entire demo shot on an iPhone. If you're really into that sort of thing.
Amazing, wonderful. So, Jay Cross, what were your like top picks then from your time getting to actually peruse the floors at NAMM? What stuck out to you?
I really enjoy. So I until the Sunday, I didn't get a huge amount of time to walk around either. Uh-huh. I know I make it sound as though I don't do any work, but I actually was absolutely exhausted the whole time. But I did manage to make myself free so that I could watch the Jim Adkins performance on the Fender booth, which was
cool.
That was really cool. So basically, there's the Jim Adkins guitar, the JA90, which has been out for, I don't know, I think this was the 10th anniversary.
Wow, because it's a very different guitar.
Yeah, completely. It's like through neck.
Yeah, through neck, mahogany, hollow body.
Two P90s.
Yeah, it's Telecaster thin line.
Yeah, it's mad. Yeah. And basically he wanted it in a new colour, so it's now available in white. But he came and did a performance and like did a couple of Jimmy Eat World songs. So it was really good.
Jimmy Eat World.
I've always called him Jimmy Eat World. I don't know why.
Jimmy Eat World.
I did Jimmy Eat World as well.
Like someone you went to school with. You know, Jimmy Eat World. <isn't it? laughs>
That's what it is.
He had an accident in year three.
The old Jimmy Eat World, you know? That was really good. I also got to go down and see the Game Changer.
Yeah.
Game Changer.
So they had their lights reverb.
What are they called?
Game Changer Audio.
Game Changer Audio.
Yeah.
So the light pedal.
Which, oh, you actually got to see it?
I did get to see it, yeah.
So gutted
I got to have a very quick play on it, and I thought it sounded amazing. Like, I really needed a bit of time to properly spend some time with it, because, you know.
I mean, try playing a reverb in that place.
I had headphones on and everything, but there was so many people around that it was different, and there was people like waiting to try it, and I don't like, you know, holding people up and everything. So, but it sounded amazing, and I've got to say, if you've not watched it, you've got to go and watch the release video that they did for that pedal, because it's some of the best pedal marketing I've ever seen. I thought it was incredible, the whole video. I really don't like to say this with you in the room, Joe, but it did remind me of the video that Polymath did for the
MS3?
Yeah. It was, you know, kind of a person standing in a room playing guitar with lots of lights going off everywhere.
It looks very, very similar to our DD3 video.
Oh, is that what I'm thinking of instead? Okay.
Yeah. It's the same lights and same sort of room thing.
Right. Maybe they just booked the room after you and you didn't clear down your stuff.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
I think that's what it is.
It looks like a very, very cool pedal. I always go and see those guys at every NAMM and I missed them, annoyingly.
I mean, it sounded amazing. It really did sound... There was, you know, maybe 3 or 4 minutes I spent playing it. It sounded really, really cool. The other thing that I really liked, particularly from an aesthetic point of view, was the Jam Pedals booth. So Jam Pedals, Greek pedal company, who we've been talking about on Guitar Nerds, well, on the podcast for a long time, because they were one of the first, I guess, kind of quote-unquote boutique pedal brands that we had when we were still all working at GAC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they had a pedal called the Waterfall, which I remember thinking at the time was just the most amazing chorus sound I'd ever heard. And I got to go and try that pedal and try it in its new form, which is the Ripley Fall, which is both the Ripple, which I think is their phaser, and the Waterfall, which is the chorus. And like the guy sort of taught me through it and showed a couple of different things that you could do with it. And then, like, it sounds amazing. But then when I put that chorus pedal on, it's just, like, incredible. Like, I think it's the gold standard for like, just a basic chorus effect. It just sounds unbelievable.
There's certainly a brand that we maybe haven't given enough airtime to recently. Fantastic sort of, you know, looking boutique style pedals, yeah, as well. Really simple, very colourful.
And I tell you what, the booth design was absolutely incredible.
So, you sent us pictures of
this. Yeah, so they have maybe like 10 pedals on display. And for people listening at home, you've got to go and check out the designs on the Jam pedals chassis. So for example, take the Waterfall, which is a it's a blue pedal with a black tap, like a faucet with running water coming out of it. And essentially what they've done is they've mounted it on a display where the kind of the rest of the pipes, so basically you could see the pipe leading up to the,
oh, that's
the tap.
Amazing.
That was built into like the background of the display, and then underneath it the water continued to flow out. And then they've got their retro vibe pedal, which has got flowers on it, but the you don't see the whole like some of the flowers are obscured by the edge of the pedal.
Right.
And so the design continued onto the frame of the back of the pedal. The whole thing looked, it was absolutely astonishing. Like, what a great display. Really, really thought through really well. And like, the people there were just really nice. They were right in the middle of it all, dealing with complete chaos 100% of the time. And when I went over to go and try a couple of the pedals, they couldn't have been lovelier. It was really good.
Did they have the pink flow on display? Their multi effect.
Yeah, they had quite. I walked past the booth. I didn't stop to really try anything, but they had a bunch of their multi effect, which is basically all of their effects built into one huge.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So, excuse me. The pink flow has got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 knobs on the front of it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 micro switches, but this is the most impressive bit. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 foot switches on a single pedal.
It's and it doesn't look kind of unwieldy.
One of them is just labelled Seagull.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I assume that's one of the...
It's the reverse wah sounds. Yeah. You know, if you plug a wah in back to front... it doesn't make a wah sound, but it makes a seagull type sound when you adjust the tone pot on your guitar. I think it's basically got the same sort of inductor as a wah pedal, and then you hit that and you get a nice little seagull sound.
The idea behind the Pink Floyd being it's like all Pink Floyd sounds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like David Gilmour in an analog floor pedal.
Yeah. I mean, I just think they're a great company, and I think that the and what was cool is I had a very brief chat with whoever it was who was helping me out, and I said, like, oh, you know, I used to work in a shop and we sold these and I haven't had a chance to try them for ages. He said, oh, what shop? Where are you from? I said, oh, from Brighton. He was like, oh, GAC.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, that's right. He was like, oh, yeah. You know, so he knew who we were and stuff, and yeah, it was really nice. It was that was great. I also want to give a shout out to Chase Bliss. So I got to go and try the new Chase Bliss pedals, and I apologize if I'm
the Chase Bliss Meris collaboration reverb. So the both and the preamp as well.
Yeah, and also got to spend a bit of time with the Mood and the Loop.
Oh, very cool.
The blooper. Sorry, blooper. I said, don't know why I said loop. Blooper. And the guy who, so also just as a quick tangent, whilst I was out there, on the Saturday or Sunday evening, I managed to hook up with the guys from the Gear Slum and Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum.
Poor you.
And the guys from Sinusoid as well. And we did an episode of the Gear Slum. There was about 10 geezers in the room, and I think there was 4 mics. So everyone was sort of like shimmying mics around. But I talked about it on there. I did a demo. I got a demo from the guys at Chase Bliss, and just the... I was there Saturday or Sunday afternoon. The geezer must have been talking nonstop for 4 days. And the demo that he gave me was so passionate and so he gave me the time to find things out for myself, and he jumped in when he needed to.
That's wonderful.
It was really good, and like, so complete shout out to them.
And was this in the case of all pedals, or was there one specific?
Specifically, I was playing with the Mood.
Right, okay.
And the blooper. And just, you know, experimenting with those because I hadn't really spent much time with them when we did it for Gear of the Year.
Sure.
And also the new reverb. The,
yeah, because I'm very interested in the reverb and also the preamp, obviously.
Yes. So they worked incredibly. Just the way that it is all put together, the switching between
with the presets, chassis and everything else looks absolutely fantastic.
And just the
mechanical faders is the best
idea. It's amazing. And actually, as I said, I think at the time, the kind of the preamp part of it is like I'm not particularly interested in, like, right, being able to, I, you know, I've never owned an EQ pedal. I don't really care.
Sure.
But the thing that I'm excited about is the platform, the new chassis, and the fact that they were able to showcase that with the Meris reverb pedal collaboration. So that's the, I can't remember what it's called. Is it the Automaton or?
The whole thing is called Automatone, which Automatone, is basically the pedals in that format.
Yeah.
And then there's the, there's the preamp and then there's the reverb. The reverb.
Yeah. The reverb sounded amazing. There was, you know, again, difficult to tell when you're sort of wearing headphones and there's loads and loads going on in and around you. But the some of the like shimmery, lush, expansive reverbs that you could get out of it were just magnificent.
Yeah.
Like really, really good. And all I did was spend some time basically going through the five presets that they had set out there. And really versatile and really amazing. And honestly, I'm very excited to see what they do next. I really hope that there's the one that for me that I think is the most has the most potential is in terms of kind of a reimagined analog delay, like a digital delay with in the same way that, you know, the Ibanez Echo Shifter has got the faders, and when you move the faders you hear the tape speed up or slow down.
Yeah,
imagine that but on
in
the
a complicated chassis with seven faders
exactly
that.
And those
I could get involved with that.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think that's the potential that they've got for that is incredible.
That,
really,
of course,
limitless.
The Echo Shifter, the Ibanez Echo Shifter, has been reimagined by Ibanez, so was there as well.
I didn't manage to get into the Ibanez booth because it's very overwhelming. not as overwhelming as the Ernie Ball booth.
Yes, the but Ernie that Ball comes booth down... is always a stage as well as being a booth.
And that's the problem. The only time I had a chance to go over there, Steve Lukather was doing a demo, was doing a signing session.
Yeah.
And so like you couldn't get in because there was a queue of people waiting to get
the
in.
The sort of downside with the Music Man booth at NAMM is that they constantly have performances there the time.
You know, so, and it makes sense because
it's wonderful, because you can't actually really demo stuff, but it means you...
But I saw the new Valentines from... Because they have them on display outside, you just couldn't pick them up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it looks amazing and... Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was great. I had a really good time. I mean, I know we'll get on to talking about it in a minute, but some of the Fender stuff that came out was amazing and really cool to be a part of it all. But just... The show as a whole, being in and around it, was amazing.
Yeah.
The biggest disappointment of the weekend was finding out on the Saturday that we missed Earth, Wind & Fire playing on the big stage outside, because that happened on the Friday. I mean, that would have been incredible. Like seeing Earth, Wind & Fire there.
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
I always see the band walking around. Every NAMM, I usually see them just hanging around outside.
How many original members are in Earth, Wind & Fire?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Captain Planet and... yeah, that was good.
Oh, that was terrible.
That was really bad. I don't know how many are in there, but, you know.
You're right, Jay. It was a good show.
It was a great show, yeah. Really
walking around with you, at least for an hour, meant that I got to see a couple things.
Well, yeah, let's talk about those, Matt. I do want to, you know, get into the news and really, because we've held off talking about any Fender releases until we got Jay back. So I really want to talk about those. But yeah, come on, Matt, from the 2 or so hours that you actually managed to look around, what did you see that excited you?
Okay, I'll power through them. Firstly, the Origin Effects Revival Trem by Tremolo.
This is very exciting.
This was very cool because at first I walked past it on the Wednesday when I was dropping a few bits off to the Thorpe booth, and I saw it and I didn't really kind of get into it. And then I spoke to one of the people on the booth, and I didn't realize that it's effectively like, I guess it's like a Princeton or a Deluxe. So it's actually got a tone and drive circuit in it, and then it's got the reverb as well. So it's more like a kind of amp in a box than it is just a Trem pedal.
Oh, this is very exciting.
You know, you've got two different types of EQ drive, and you can kind of place them where you want. Then you've got a separate on and off button for the drive and the trem, and then the foot switch also works for either tap tempo, or like you can then multiply it as well, so you can have a tap tempo and everything in, which I thought was really cool. Sounded amazing, looked dead cool.
That's cracking. I actually spoke to Adam from Origin FX today. He's sending one over to us, so we'll have one to kind of have a look at in depth over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. Just rock solid build, like everything they've done before. Sorry, it wasn't a Princeton. It's based on a Deluxe, like I think a 60. I'm pretty sure it's like a 63 Deluxe, but it's very, very amp-like, I think. So that's really, really cool. I checked out very briefly the Pigtronics Infinity 2, which is kind of the next. I don't think it's like the next in line to the Infinity, because it doesn't as much. It's just a dual looper with some effects in it. But what I really liked is it's got an onboard decay control. So that is how many repeats you get of the loop. So you can get that real kind of Frippertronics type thing where you get that like real sound on sound. So the loops never go forever.
Yeah.
They'll repeat like, you know, 5 or 10 times as they start to fade out. But what you can do is you can do that. You can kind of create a massive soundscape, then turn the decay control all the way up, and then everything will just keep going indefinitely.
Just so you continue can kind of to oscillate, right?
Yeah, thing, yeah, so you can like capture moments of a performance and stuff, which I thought was really cool. Super small. It's, you know, it's got all the DL4 type effects on it, and it works very DL4 like. So, you know, that's, you know, guys like Nick, for example, like we said, using it on the booth, I think a lot of people still want that very kind of plug and play, simple to use loop function. So I thought that was pretty cool. And that's going to be like $199. So I thought that was pretty reasonably priced. I got to very quickly, and I did send you a picture. I went to past the Ashdown booth and saw our friend Lee at Ashdown and checked out the Lowrider, which is their kind of one of their new basses, which I thought was absolutely amazing.
So these are, yes, as we mentioned on last week's episode, these are the Dan Lakin designed Ashdown, yes, basses. So premium quality basses from an amp company.
He turned up the day before and went, no, this one needs flats. So it had flats on it. And then we were going through the CTM 300.
Yeah, that's the headset I've got.
It's the one you've got, yeah.
So that's the Lowrider is the Thunderbird style, or Thunderbird-esque.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a reverse.
It's a reverse Thunderbird thing, yeah. Sort of a reverse Thunderbird. More like, what was the Entwistle Dean called?
You tell me.
The spider, that was it. Yeah.
No, isn't that the one that's like pointy? Isn't
no.
that like an explorer?
No, he had everywhere.
I'm going to stop because all three of us are googling it. So I'm
everyone's
stop.
Googling. Dean Entwistle.
No, that's the explorer. The spider is the explorer.
Oh, Dean Entwistle is actually a person. Okay. Oh, he's a drug dealer. Right, okay.
Not John Entwistle, we should say that.
No, yes. Oh, yes, the Dean, here we are, I found it. It was called the Hybrid Pro.
Of course.
And yes, it is the one released by Ashdown
that
is
really
quite,
memorable name.
Yeah, it's quite similar to the Hybrid Pro. But yeah, sort of a non-reverse Thunderbird-esque, but with two Music Man-style eight-pole-pieced
chunky
pickups, yeah, and that was strung up with flats, you say?
Yes, it was, and it sounded amazing, even for a terrible bass player like myself. I thought it sounded really good, really, obviously, really good quality basses. I know when you sort of first told us about them, Joe, I was a bit like, meh. But then I played one and was like, nah, I kind of get it. I think, you know, well-priced, good quality bass, especially if you want something a bit different. And yeah, like you say, it comes from a sort of heritage of good sort of bass design, as it were. So I thought that was really cool. So I got a bit of time to check out that. And the headphones. So we were talking about their headphones because I'd not actually seen them in person. I think we might have mentioned them on the podcast before, but they've got the VU meter in the side.
Yeah.
So... it now comes with an app, and the app can control things like the lights. So you can like change the color of the lights in the VU meter and stuff like
yeah.
that, which I thought was just like totally bizarre. But
now we're talking.
So there was that as well. So yeah, that was the cool thing from Ashdown. And then with Jay, we went downstairs into Hall E very briefly, saw Tom from Gray's Guitars. So he'd made a couple of new... He'd made a new model, which I'm trying to remember the name of it. I want to say it was called the Sidewinder, but I'm not 100%. Like a Jazzmaster-style offset guitar. But what was really cool is that he'd actually sunk the trem into the body.
Oh, yeah.
So rather than the plate, which would normally sit like on top, it actually like carved out the where it sits. So everything was totally flush. And then he had like a pink 2P90 like T-type guitar, which had even put like pink side dots on. So I thought that was pretty cool. And just, you know, overall, just great quality finished guitars. And he's based in London. So we were talking about maybe heading over to his and trying a few out and getting him on the podcast as well, since he's local. And then he was also there with Tim from Hampstead, and they had a kind of new prototype of their new EQ pedal. So it was an EQ and a compressor in one with one foot switch. And I thought what they'd done there, which was really cool, they were like, so many people use switching systems now, are like really nice design foot switch goes like unused. So we thought, how can we build more functionality into the foot switch? So you've got a compressor on one side and an EQ on the other, and you can set it up so the button turns both on or both off, or it flip-flops between the two, so you can go between compressor or EQ.
Oh, very
nice. Or it leaves the EQ on all the time, and then you can turn the compressor on and off. So you can have like an always-on, make gooder EQ, and then hit a compressor on. Or you can have the compressor on all the time, and then switch in the EQ.
Yeah, that's more like it. Boost.
So I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a really something quite unique that I'd not seen from another pedal design before. So that was pretty cool, and got to be honest, I didn't really like try much stuff like that in terms of hearing it, because NAMM is literally the worst place to try and demo.
Well, especially when you're anything. Looking at, if you make gooders and compressors, like a sort of,
yeah, thing. I remember talking
NAMM
to
NAMM is their nemesis.
I remember talking to
Thorpe last year, wasn't it? He launched
last year, yeah. And it's just like, can't hear anything. And actually, we should say I went over to Thorpe. It's not on their website yet, but they did announce their two new pedals, the Field Marshal and the Bunker.
Yeah.
So for those who haven't seen,
which is the reimagining of the
Love Tone pedals.
Yeah, exactly.
So Dan Coggins, the original designer of Love Tone, is behind all of those as well. So they took the original circuits, the original products, and basically redesigned the circuit for modern day, and then put them in the Thorpe housing. And then we also spoke to Mikey Demas and checked out the Honey Badger real quick and everything as well, and just caught up with those guys. And that pedal's obviously amazing. Can't wait to kind of play it properly. And the same with the Thorpe stuff as well. I thought those looked super, super cool.
Yeah.
This episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergo Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergo Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Engel, and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergo dealer at shergoguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergo dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergo will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoguitars.com. Shergo Guitars. Be your own original.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, before we dive head first into some news, Mark Packham.
Hello there.
You've said all of two words on this episode. I can see that you're just doing work
I'm
in
not
the corner.
I'm not working at all. I'm not actually. I've been reading about the Vox UL 730.
Okay,
so well, the reason
keeping it bang up to date.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That. Yeah, I'm gonna talk about the Beatles.
Well, that's
and
right.
Some
I wanted
old
to
ends.
Bring you into this.
So the reason that I'm doing this is the only kind of bit of gear stuff that I've done this week is I've been reading a book called Dreaming the Beatles.
By... So that's why you're going through another Beatles phase.
Yeah. So Dreaming the Beatles by Rob Sheffield, who I believe is a Rolling Stone writer, maybe. Right. And yeah, basically the book is a kind of a different take on Rolling Stone, a different take on a kind of a biography of the Beatles, as it were, and it takes the form of like short essays around different aspects of the Beatles. And the book is amazing. It's really kind of got me back into the Beatles after a while.
As if you've ever not been massively into the Beatles.
But like, in a way that I haven't been for a very long time, in that like, okay, yeah, I've got a Beatles playlist that I'll put on like while we're having breakfast in the morning, and it will be mostly from like Beatles number ones, and it will be those songs. Whereas like this week, I've been listening to a lot of alternate takes and a lot of stuff on YouTube, like weird bootlegs and
so
stuff.
So this is why, because you've actually damaged your ears. Because
yeah,
you...
I've been listening to Paperback Writer incredibly loud on some very expensive headphones. The reason being that I've decided that Paperback Writer has the best guitar sound ever recorded. And that leads me back to my original point in that, the amp used is the Vox UL730. And... really, really interesting read about this amp. Incredibly rare Vox amp. They reckon something like 130 ever made, something like that. Yeah, don't quote me on that number, but not many anyway. And
when was this? When was that amp?
Let's have a look. The it's mid 60s. I think it's 1965. But it's the key thing about it is that it's a hybrid amp. So it's solid state pre and valve output stage.
Right.
And it's very kind of gritty sounding, incredibly gritty, but it's got loads of oomph behind the sound as well. And so I've been doing a lot of reading about that, and that brought me onto a pedal that we talked briefly about when it came out, which is the Aclam Dr. Robert pedal. And basically, I've spent most of this week just listening to demos of that, because it is essentially spot on for... If you just basically want to play the intro to Paperback Writer, which is what I absolutely want to do forever from now on, this is the pedal that you need.
I see.
And it sounds exactly like it. We talked about Aclam a few times, and we have talked about this pedal before, but I think everyone should go and check out the demos. Because
that's the Dr. Roberts pedal. So Aclam are a really interesting company. We've mentioned them a few
times.
What
does this
one
smell like?
You're right. Aclam did do the cinnamon drive, and it came in a bag that smelt of cinnamon.
This one.
So I assume if this is a Beatles pedal, it's going to come up smelling like ganja or something.
No, like a Beatles. Yeah. Like crushed Beatles. No, this
shellac.
This does not have that gimmick. Well, as far as I know, I mean, they might smell great, but
it's
but
still
they don't
in there. Is it in their proprietary sort of?
It is.
Fixing...
It's in this. Yeah, it's in this housing that they do where they've got kind of fixers on the side, which you can fix to their own kind of pedal board. That they do. And the gimmick really for this one in terms of the look is, firstly, the way that it came about is the team at Aclam actually got hold of an original UL730, and they even put the serial number of the UL730
that's cool.
That it's based on. But the other thing is, if you're a bit of a Beatles nerd, it's quite cool because the artwork is done by Klaus Voormann, who did the original artwork for Revolver.
Oh,
so
that's wonderful. That's amazing that
they
went
wow,
to
really?
Those
yeah.
lengths. To
so it
that
seems
done.
That they've kind of drafted him into to do the artwork, which is super cool. And it also has, it's got two foot switches. One is the on-off. The other one is the Max Schau button, which is a great Beatles reference for those in the know.
Oh, I don't know it.
I believe it means more show.
Right.
And it's what they would get shouted at when they were
when they were in Hamburg.
Energy fell flat in their Hamburg gigs.
Oh. Right.
The promoters would say, Max Schau, make a show or more. It just means like more loud, do more.
Do a good one.
And
loud.
That's what that button does. That's it's an independent, it's got an independent volume control, and clicking the Max Schau button gives you a volume boost.
Why on earth would you ever not... Why is that not on all the time?
Well, I guess the idea is that you've got one sound and then it gives you a bit of a bump up if you need it for like solos and that.
Fair enough.
But what I might do now, I've decided, is I want to buy one of these, and I want to buy like a Dan Electro Back Talk when they come out, the reissue, and then I'm just going to play Beatles stuff and like backwards by like delays and that.
Selma treble and bass or something.
I'll probably still use the Katana because this is doing most of the work, and I feel like in the front end of the Katana.
Yeah, but Selma treble and basses look wicked.
Yeah, but also like really impractical for my flat.
No, Mark, you're not listening to me. They
Selma
look
treble and basses
wicked.
Look
what,
really
what
good.
I would rather do is spend that money buying a casino, like the guitar, not an actual casino. That'd be weird. and yeah, I just want to go.
Slots.
I want to go full Beatles and I want to get a casino.
Are you going to get a Beatles haircut?
No. There's no way I could do that with my hair. You know how thin my hair is? It's not a mop top. It's like more like sort of Wurzel Gummidge.
Can you get like a furry jacket like George on the Roof?
That is a good jacket. Yeah. And Ella absolutely owns a lot of coats. That That's
so true.
So yes, I could probably do that.
Please do that.
Yeah, I want to get a hold of one of these pedals and I'm probably going to buy an Epiphone Casino. Okay. I've decided.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we do need to get stuck into some news because I really want to talk about all the cool new Fender things. But just very quickly before we do, if you are in the UK, then very soon there's another guitar event going on. The Guitar Show kicks off in Birmingham at some point. When does it kick off?
It's the end of Feb, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It's a leap year guitar show, so it will be the 29th. Of February and the 1st of March. Yeah,
I can't go because my cousin is getting married on the leap year day.
Ah, so they're never going to have a wedding anniversary.
Yeah, just
great
like once
idea.
Every 4 years. Yeah. So I can't go because it's bang in the middle
of
that.
No, you won't be there, but the rest of us are all going to be there. And you listen.
So, I mean, Joe, don't put people off.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. I maybe won't be there. But no, you can go too, listener, if you just go to theguitarshow.co.uk/tickets. Then it is. It's like £12.50 to get in, which is.
It's always been good.
It's a fantastic show.
We've been.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm disappointed. I can't.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about? You insane Hollywood ass." So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No, I like going to it.
Exactly,
it's,
you can come
to...
Yeah.
I mean, it will mean that you're going to have to...
chickpea curry on my own.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The food's always good.
Are you at
the
wedding for both days?
I'm the wedding... Well, I mean, I'm staying up and I won't have my car with me. Sure. So, I mean, I could go and join you on the Sunday.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I'll be in my tuxedo. Probably.
I mean, that's worth £12.50.
I tell you what, if you turn up in your tuxedo, I'll wear my tuxedo to the show.
Okay. Listen to me right now, Joe. Yep. I will 100%. We don't have to talk about this again.
Okay.
I'll definitely do it.
All right.
Okay.
I'm there.
That's a deal.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's done. Anyway, hold on. What's that noise? Yes, that's right. You are hearing it correctly. It is, in fact, the question duck. Signaling that it is time for the questions segment of the podcast. Oh no, I'm not.
What are you doing?
I haven't done the news. Oh, I've got all flustered. Well, we did hear the question duck, but we're going to ignore the question duck and we're going to dive headfirst into. Look, okay, I'll come clean. It was my girlfriend's 35th birthday over the weekend, and we went.
Always the gentleman giving away a lady's age.
Yeah. We went also today's Tuesday. That's 48 hours has passed since the weekend.
Yes, I know. But
it does still have quite a strong smell of booze.
There is some proper booze sweats going on.
On the Sunday, we went to a beer festival. We were going to a beer festival for it with a family and friends. And then afterwards,
we were going back to
ours. Emma's family and friends, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we were going back to ours for a
Emma's
party.
Emma's family and Emma's friends.
So beer festival.
Because we weren't there, so I don't know who else.
No, exactly. Beer festival and then back to ours for a party. But the beer festival
festival was kind of out sort of in the middle of nowhere. And on the day, Emma was like, I tell you what, I'm just going to drive to the beer festival, because also she was performing at the beer festival and she wanted to drive. And then like a few other people sort of drove as well. And then the people that weren't driving happened to be like cider drinkers. So they were just like, well, rather than getting the beer tokens, we're just going to pay for cider at the bar, because there's a bar as well as the sort of, you know, the beer token beer. But by this point, I'd already bought 40 beer tokens, thinking that I'd be handing them out to everyone. And I was more or less the only person drinking. And I remember nothing of the Sunday, but apparently I was great, really, really lovable. But I found three tokens remaining the next day.
How many tokens was a beer?
Like between one and two. So it varied. And I was there for 6 hours. So, yeah, people were doing the maths and working out how much I drank. I'm sure I gave some away as well, so I'm sure it's not like that, but, you know.
You are known for your boozy generosity. Ooh,
yes, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. But I really do remember virtually nothing of the day. Apparently, I was lovely. I cried when I gave Emma her gift in front of all her family and our friends, which is incredibly embarrassing.
Presumably, you weren't boozed at that point.
Oh, no, no. I was incredibly drunk, because I did that in the evening.
I think they thought it was tears, but actually it was just spilt booze.
It was just booze seeping out of my pores.
Yeah. I wasn't crying, I was leaking.
Yes, yeah, yeah. My guitarist
hit saturation point.
Yeah. My guitarist Tim said he'd never seen me that drunk, and he's seen me drink a bottle of vodka with a straw. But no, he hasn't really. But I bought Emma a 1978 Korg MS-10. Synthesizer, which is the coolest thing I've ever bought anyone. It's a very cool synthesizer. Are either of you familiar with it, or Matt?
I mean, I'm familiar with the reissue. Well, not the reissue, but the current MS-20, yeah.
Which is a mini key version of it, and I think it's also polyphonic. The MS-10 was a monophonic single oscillator version of that, so kind of the affordable version of the MS-20.
Yes.
But my goodness, absolutely fantastic.
You've had an MS-20, didn't you? Matty?
No, I was going to build one because I did a kit for a while, but it links very nicely into a guitar pedal that I saw today by Sub Decay Effects. They've actually made something called the M3, which is a 3-oscillator monophonic guitar synth based on the oscillators and filters in an MS-20.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, which I thought was very, very cool. So if you have heard of it and you're like, yeah, I really want that sound, you can buy it.
This pedal absolutely incredible.
It looks banging, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's great. They've based the look really on that sort of MS-10, MS-20, yeah. Very functional Korg look.
It looks like a bit of modular rack gear looks, that's put into a pedal.
Yeah. It looks amazing.
I've got a feeling that Behringer also recently did an MS-20 style clone. So if you want to buy a vintage one, I think you can buy a Behringer style one.
Have we never got involved with Sub Decay pedals before? Because their stuff looks absolutely amazing.
I don't know. They've always made great stuff. They've been around for a very long time. I remember in the early days when I started at GAC, them sort of being around and having a couple of pedals that were only available in the States. I just don't think you see them much looking at their dealer list right now. The only places you can buy them in the UK, Wanjo's, Sounds Great, Joe's Pedals, which is online, so there's just a phone number, and Break the Machine, which is a relatively new store.
They do a great looking pedal called the Starlight Flanger, which has got a real sort of, I'm not going to say Star Trek vibe, I'm going to say, or Star Wars vibe, I'm going to say sub that, more like
Battlestar.
No, not even
do
Battlestar.
Not, do not say that Battlestar is sub more like Star Wars or Star Trek.
More like
Joe.
Sorry.
Starman or
Buck Rogers.
Buck Rogers or like The Last Starfighter. Ooh, that sort of vibe.
Okay.
It's great movies from the 80s.
I'm trying to name more budget.
What was the space movie
now?
With John Travolta?
Battlefield Earth.
Oh yeah,
greatest movie ever.
It's absolutely not.
He has the blackest goatee in that, like it's like jet black.
That's when he was still dyeing his hair, wasn't he?
Right. Yeah.
I don't think he does that anymore.
Careful.
No, I think he's bald now.
He doesn't know any less.
Anyway. We're so far in. We're like 45 minutes in, and we really need to do this news. So, without further ado, let's dive headfirst into a big barrel of news.
News! News!
J. Cross. Let's in order of the decade correct release of the cool Fender things that were released at NAMM. Let's power through some amazing releases. Big NAMM for Fender.
Yeah, lots to talk about. So,
but cool NAMM for Fender,
yeah,
as well.
Very cool.
Last NAMM was great. There was lots of stuff, but it was all like, here's some new standard lines. Whereas now it's like, here's some amazingly cool stuff that you didn't think would ever bring back.
Yeah, well, so I guess the big headline release was the kind of the first public showing of the American Ultra series guitars, which are very cool, but we've sort of talked about those, so we'll skip over those. And I just wanted to mention a few of the kind of, maybe not niche points, but like things that maybe didn't make the headline news. So first of all, I'm just going to talk very briefly about the one that we didn't put on the news, and I don't know why I forgot about it, but did you see that there was a 70th anniversary Broadcaster released?
I did not.
Yeah. So basically, it's the first time since 1950 that you have been able to buy a guitar with the word Broadcaster
in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, because they now own Gretsch.
Well, it's a bit more convoluted than that, actually. Okay, it's not quite as simple as that, but we've got permission to use the name. Fender has got permission to use the name. But just to, you know, I'm sure everyone's heard this story before, but in 1950, when the guitar came out, the Telecaster was originally called the Broadcaster, and they reckon that maybe 250 were made.
With it on the headstock.
With it on the headstock. And then Fred Gretsch came, Fred Gretsch Sr., I think, came along and said, sorry, I own the name Broadcaster for my drums. You can't call it that. Please change the name. And for about 18 months, what happened was the names were just scratched off. And that's where No Caster came from, because they just weren't anything.
Yeah.
And then to try and appeal to like kind of new people who were into modern technology,
yeah,
Fender, Leo called the guitar the Telecaster after the television.
Right. So he should have the Internet Caster now, or the Instagram Caster.
Well, but then it's
Netcaster.
It's exactly the same thing that happened with the Stratocaster, because it was all about space exploration.
Oh,
people going into
the stratosphere.
Yeah. So that's where that name came from. So yeah, the thing is like, we think about these names now, it's like, oh wow, Telecaster, Stratocaster. Essentially what it is it's the same thing as calling stuff like the iCaster now.
Oh,
like, it's finding like a cool name and then just like taking it.
Tindercaster.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Or you know, Caster without the without the E.
Oh, yeah. That's the next step. They're gonna drop the E in Caster.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, very, very cool, big thick neck, flathead screws on the
that's great.
Which is something that didn't happen in 1952. Or, you know, maybe it did right at the start, but blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so that's really cool. So that's 1950.
Okay.
Moving on to 1952, there are some brand new classic vibe 50s Esquires.
This is very cool.
So the Esquire, again, obviously people know about this, is Telecaster with just the one pickup in the bridge. And these have been brought for the first time. There's been a couple of limited models that have come out, but for the first time, they are now available in the Classic Vibe range. So they are available in Butterscotch Blonde, Daphne Blue, or Surf Green, all with a maple board, obviously, because it's 50s.
Single ply plates,
just super, super 50s. Joe, you sent me a text saying that you were going to sell your Baja Telly and buy one.
I'm going to sell my Baja and I'm going to get the Butterscotch one. Absolutely.
The thing to bear in mind, though, is you can only use it as an Esquire. It has not been routed for a neck pickup.
Oh, that's really cool. I think that's really fine with me.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, you can only use it as an Esquire.
At that. I thought they'd use like a stock body, you know, and just have a different plate on it.
No. There's no routing. It's just Esquire.
Absolutely.
And it's also because of that, it still has a three way switch, but it's the Esquire switching. So right. Full tone, half tone, tonal eclipse.
Right.
What? What's funny about that? Okay.
I don't think anyone outside of the UK will get that record.
I don't know what you're talking about. Matt, the only jokes I ever tell are for you guys. So like, I don't care about anybody outside of this room or your room. Right. So the other cool Squire thing that came out. I mean, you wanted to talk. You wanted me to talk about this, Joe. More,
this is pretty cool.
So
we can just mention it as a cursory thing.
Bullet Mustangs, the guitar that should have won Gear of the Year 3 years ago, and everyone said no, the Epiphone SL is better. And then when it got to the final, everyone went, the Epiphone SL is not very good, is it? Perhaps we should have put the Bullet Mustang through. And I was vindicated, as I always am in hindsight, when it comes to Gear of the Year, I would like to add. But anyway, Bullet Mustangs are now available in like sparkle finishes.
It's the competition colours, isn't it? It's competition red and blue.
Well, it's Lake Placid blue with an ice blue metallic stripe.
I think it's competition blue.
It's not. It's Lake Placid blue with an ice blue metallic stripe and candy apple red with a burgundy mist stripe.
I see. Wow.
So, yeah, they're very cool. But other than that, they are the same. So that's, where's that taken us to? That's 1952 and 1956, I think the Mustang was. Or was it 54? I can't remember. Right. What is next on the list of ridiculous things that you've asked me to talk about here?
So next would be the American Originals.
Okay, so the American Originals. So American Original series guitars came out in, 2 years ago now?
Right.
And they were very cool. You know, they took
A great way to sort of bring that whole vintage line back into, you know, to sort of, there was some price awkwardness with the previous series and stuff. This really put American Originals are in the right place price-wise for people who don't necessarily want a custom shop, but do want those vintage correct specs.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a couple of new, there was some new finishes, but the thing that was actually exciting was the new Telecasters that came into the range. So there is a 60s thin line, which is maple board with the F-hole and three very cool finishes. So there's a natural, there's a three-colour sunburst, and there is a surf green or sea foam
lovely.
Green.
Oh, I didn't realise they were doing it in like a cool surf colour as well.
Yes, but the one that is, for me, the most exciting, and I was really surprised that there wasn't more of this that was made at the show, is the 70s Tele Custom. So 70s Tele Custom available in three finishes, but that's not really important. What's important is the fact that these have got brand new Kunafe wide range humbuckers in.
Right.
Okay. So what's exciting about that is the, you know how when we've talked about 70s, like 72 Tele reissues, the customs or the deluxes, we've always talked about the fact that the pickups don't sound very good. Right. I mean, that's kind of been my talking point always been, I don't really like them because the pickups don't sound very good. And the thing is that the pickups that have been in the reissues aren't the proper pickups.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to give you a little bit of a history on Kunafe. Okay. So Kunafe is the magnet that was in the original pickups in a way that nowadays we use Alnico.
Yeah.
Yeah. Originally, these humbuckers were originally made of Kunafe. Now, Kunafe is an alloy that was invented in the 30s that was originally used. It was like the first magnet that could be turned into screws, essentially. It was quite malleable because it's quite soft.
Right.
And its main use was in speedometers and tachometers, so in the automobile industry. But towards the end of the 70s, those started to move over to being electronic as opposed to being magnetic.
Right.
So the use of the availability of Kunafe kind of disappeared. Now that was a problem for Fender because basically when Seth Lover, who left Gibson to come and join Fender, one of the first things he made was a new pickup because the PAFs were still under patent, obviously.
Yeah.
So he made a new style of humbucker that used the Kunafe magnet. Okay.
Right.
But by 1979, you couldn't get Kunafe anymore. And so in the 40 years since then, between then and now, nobody has been able to make pickups that sounded like the pickups that were in the original 70s wide range humbuckers.
Right.
Over the last couple of years, and I only found this out recently, over the last couple of years, Fender have been working with someone somewhere who has managed to recreate.
This is incredibly specific of
they've
them.
They've managed to recreate the Kunafe magnet. So,
right.
Like over the last few years, loads of companies, including Fender, have tried to make stuff that sounded like Kunafe, but it didn't really, it just didn't really work. Hence why for the last few years I've been talking about the fact that 72 tellies didn't sound very good.
Sure.
But Fender have actually done it now.
Amazing.
And they are proper Kunafe magnets. They're exclusive just to Fender. Apparently the technology involved in actually remaking the Kunafe has been is really expensive and has been a total nightmare. And these humbuckers are only available in the American original 70s Tele Customs. And let me tell you, they sound so good. So I really hope that they get released as a standalone part because they're absolutely...
I'm sure they'll turn up in custom shops as well.
Yeah, probably they will at some point, yeah. But I mean, you know, I've got that...
I bought a
72 Tele body.
You need this to be
that's exactly my... So I'm desperate for these to be available as standalone parts. And yeah, so what's funny is like when... Blake from the Tone Mob, Blake and Jess were walking around and I sort of gave him a little bit of a tour and they spoke to me afterwards and they were like, just found out about these pickups. Why didn't you tell me? I was like, well, they weren't on display and I totally forgot basically. and yeah, I mean, they were like, oh, can't wait to hear them. And honestly, they're amazing. And it's very cool to see something that's a proper vintage reissue coming back into these guitars. And I just think it adds a little bit of authenticity to the line. So that's that. Now, that's the 70s.
We are not going to make it through all of these. So we are going to continue.
I'm sure
over
everyone would appreciate you stopping me.
But I do. I was going to say, I do want one more piece of news. And then, because there are five pieces of Fender news that we're going to talk about. But I do want the next one. So let's do...
I was going to say, why don't we just do some question duck?
Well, yes, yeah, the question duck is calling, but, you know, I figured we'd get in one piece of news and then do the question duck.
Okay.
But I tell you what, no, let's cram straight over onto the question duck, because there he is again, making a lot of noise this week. He's probably angry that I, obviously...
You introduced him, you let him in, and then you booted him back out.
You tempted him with the bread, and then you went, no, I'm sorry, duck, I can't feed you this bread, it will make
oranges,
you sick.
Oranges.
Orange, you glad I fed you some
feed
bread?
Feed him oranges.
Because it's a segment.
It's a question segment. Oh, anyway. Okay.
I liked when I wasn't on this podcast.
Okay. So first up, and this is, I guess this is kind of in line with a lot of things we've been talking about, but Thomas Aldergren asked on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, what are the products launched at NAMM that you really are considering buying this year? I know that means we're still going to talk about the NAMM theme for a little bit, but what things have we actually seen? Because you see lots of things and you're like, damn, that's really cool. But what things have each of us seen that we're actually thinking about putting our hands into our pockets and spending money on? Mark Packham, you look to go.
Yeah, I'll go first. Boss Wazza headphones. We talked about it in Gear of the Year. And actually, again, you know, this week I've sat down and played tons and tons of guitar because I've got back on this Beatles tip for whatever reason. And I was playing guitar last night, and as great as Wazza sounds as a home amp, I turned it up a bit to the point where I felt uncomfortable for my neighbours. Right. And I was like, this sounds so much better. It's whatever amp it is, basically whatever amp you've got, the louder it gets, the better it's going to sound. But I was at a point where I was like, you know, even though they're a bit noisy sometimes, they're a bit stompy, they make like banging noises and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I don't feel comfortable even playing a guitar at this volume. So that is the thing for me. That solves a very specific problem. I can't afford them right now, but I would really, really like to get some Wazza headphones because I want to play more guitar than ever, and I can't really do it at a volume. Even with one of the best practice amps ever made, can't do it at a volume that's satisfying.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Matthew Knight.
I will probably say the Pigtronics Looper, just because... after watching Nick Reinhardt, I was like, really want a DL4. And then I was like, oh, this kind of does everything that the DL4 does, and it's a little bit smaller. And I thought that was a really cool pedal. And I already use the Infinity Looper now. I'm not really using the MIDI stuff. So something that's a bit simpler, but they're kind of same sort of idea. I like the idea of that. I didn't get a huge amount of time to see a lot of other stuff, but the Thorpey stuff, obviously, I love everything they do. So I'm keen to try... keen to try those, and I'm sure I will buy one of those as well. But I don't know. I'm going to wait for the dust to settle and see.
I kind of feel like you need to read through some NAM releases, don't you? Because you've I guess you've been so busy with Boss, you've probably missed a load of stuff.
Yeah, one thing I did actually just spot looking through some press releases, which I can't believe I didn't know existed, and I really wish I'd had time to go and see them, were the new Charvels that were announced. Three single coil ones. I was like, oh, they look pretty cool. I mean, everything that they've done recently since the DK24, obviously the dual humbucker one, now the three single coil one, I'm like, oh, that's just another killer version of that guitar. So no doubt they'll be amazing. I probably won't buy one because I don't really need one, but that...
Well, you've already got a DK24.
Exactly, but they look like cool guitars nonetheless.
Yeah.
I thought of something else just while you were talking about that. Yes. Three single coils. The Yvette Young signature Ibanez looks absolutely incredible.
And on that note, the new Pyre, Steve Vai, is amazing. It's a ridiculous price. I mean, it's obviously it's the top end. Yeah. It's $4,666. But I really like they've reimagined the gem. The gem's not being discontinued, but it's not like they've gone, here's another gem in another color with a different... It's like, it's got new trim on it. It's got obviously the different monkey grip handles. They're like
they're like tears. Yeah. They're like yin and yang signs.
Then it's got new, you know, fretboard design. It's got new design pickups in it. I really like the fact that it's got a magnetic backplate for changing strings. I thought that was really cool. Okay. It's like, the problem with Floyd Rose is they're a nightmare to change strings and stuff like that. So we've made it super easy. I thought that was actually a really cool guitar. I probably wouldn't buy one. I definitely...
That's the whole point of this question.
Well, I would buy one if I had the money.
Right.
Let's put it that way. Okay. Because I thought I actually think it looks better than the gem, and it comes in pink sparkle, which, you know, sells everything to me. So
yes, absolutely.
Do we know how much these Yvette Young guitars are? Because they look so good. I imagine they're not going to be...
The Tolman isn't an especially expensive line of guitars.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like these are probably like prestige.
Probably,
build
but
kind of
Ibanez
thing.
Still do a good job, even at their prestige line, of keeping things quite affordable.
Yeah,
I'd be surprised if they're over the grand mark.
I would not.
No,
over the grand.
Yeah.
Mark.
Yeah. I don't know. I honestly couldn't say because, you know, it really depends on where it's built, how it's built. You know, like, for example, the Noodles model that's still current, I guess, is a signature.
There's no way.
How do we
There is still one. There
how?
Is one.
Of all the guitars that Ibanez do, that is the only one that we constantly refer to, the Noodles one.
The NDM4 is the current Noodles, which is the two kind of P90 equipped one. That's kind of a Tolman shape, and it is £449. But
We don't know the spec, so we'll have to wait and see. Jay Cross, has there been anything you've seen that you think you'd actually part money with?
Yeah, a couple of things, actually. So, first of all, you know, in terms of kind of reissues, I still really want to get an Ibanez Echo Shifter at some point. The ES20s, I just think, are amazing pedals. They look, they sound, they feel incredible. It's like a really organic way to play guitar, and I think they're fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm also really intrigued by the, and I haven't had a chance to play one yet, but the Earthquaker Life pedal.
Yeah.
So after the original versions of them sold out immediately, this is the Sun signature pedal, I guess. And those ones sold out absolutely immediately. So they came along with these afterwards, which is kind of a production line one, I guess. And I think they seem to be a bit cheaper. I mean, they're still best part of £300. So I would really need to...
They're not hand wired, I think, these ones. They are still, like, they hand populate the circuit boards, but they're like a solder bath, so that's all it's,
right,
but where the previous ones were like point to point,
right? Yeah, they were a lot more money though, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were like
500 quid. Yeah, so these are best part of £300, so it is still a lot of money. But one of the things that I like about it, and I was just sort of reading up on it there, one of the things that this can do that the other one can't do is you do have an expression input that allows you to control the octave blend, which I think is really cool. Like that, you should be able to get
That's very cool.
Yeah, you should be able to get some really nice kind of noisy shimmery feedbacky type sounds out of that. So that sounds really good. And I've just been listening to loads of Sun recently. They put out two records last year, and they're just
still like, finishing the first one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. but yeah, the Life Metal, that's what that one. Yeah, it's because of the Life Pedal. Life Metal, which was the kind of main record that they put out, it's just amazing. Like, it's absolutely, it's so intense and so just like bonkers. I absolutely love that record. And then they put out another one which I can't remember the name of. It's like Proclaster something, I don't know. That is like also pretty good, but Life Metal, amazing. And so I've been kind of inspired to try and do some heavier stuff, so thinking about that. And also, on a kind of more realistic note, the MXR Timmy, which I don't know if we've talked too much about.
We did.
Did you talk,
Mark,
about it last week?
Yeah.
I think we spoke about it on the Patreon.
We spoke about it when Matt was still here, a couple weeks ago.
Also, maybe before when I was away.
When you were away.
I think it's a really interesting collaboration. Paul Cochran hooking up with MXR and, releasing kind of a production line version of one of the most kind of talked about and hidden gems of the boutique world.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the Timmy has
become
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But just, I think it's a really interesting collaboration, and it seems wicked, and I'm very excited to give one of those a go. And I think that's, I've always from afar really admired the Timmy,
right.
And to try one in the sort of slim down, the Matt Knight special, micro pedal version, I think will be really exciting. So really keen to give one of those a go, and I think that is kind of on the radar.
Very cool. I think for me, the Vintage's new collaboration with Joe Doe, the Lucky Betty guitars, which is their bound strap with a single TV Jones style pickup in the bridge. They've got that available in two colours. I love it in the white. I actually like it in the orange as well, but really like it in the white. Comes in a tweed style hard case as well, all for £599 British pounds, which is just an unbelievable deal for what is an incredibly cool looking guitar. So I think for me, that is absolutely something that I'll be purchasing.
I also really like about this how, on the Jodo website, he would just have the backstories to the guitars.
Yeah.
But, if you have found your way onto the Jodo website, you kind of know what's going on here. This is just on the JHS website. Yeah. And they still have the backstory. So if you're, if you're someone who's just been looking around for a Shub Capo, or actually I'm not sure if they do Shub. They do Shub Capos. just to double check there. If you've been looking for one of those, or like a Diago pedal board or something, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, what's this Joe Doe? And it's got the backstory to starting out in the summer of 1959 from Porter, Indiana. Lucky better, it's just like, why? What is someone selling their own guitar? There's no mention of what the deal is with it. It's fantastic. I think it's great. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that's weird. But yeah, they just seem so wonderful. And yeah, I did say I'm probably going to sell my Baja and get the Esquire, just because it's so very cool and such an incredible price. And the Classic Vibe series have been so incredibly consistently good.
Do the routing yourself. That's what I'd recommend.
Oh, yeah, yes, sure. Yeah.
Grab a chisel. Happy
you'll be
days. Right.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah, why not? Anyway, that pretty much takes us up to time for this week's regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode of Guitar Nerds every week over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can also find it in the description of this podcast episode. This week's Patreon episode, we're going to be continuing to count down Jay's Fender news, and maybe if we get time, we're going to talk about a handful of other NAMM news releases. This is the longest amount of time we've ever still been covering NAMM, and
yeah,
it's not too much stuff. Not through want of trying to. We absolutely went at like lightning pace last week,
yeah,
Mark Packham, to try and get through as much stuff as possible, and we still only managed half the list of what we had.
I mean, in fairness, there's like 500 companies,
yeah,
there,
yeah,
exactly. All releasing a handful. Yeah,
it's just normally the stuff's not all that interesting, but this year it feels like everyone
this year was really good. It was very cool to be there.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, to listen to that and become a Patreon supporter, it costs only $1 a month and you can enjoy the podcast ad-free and normally early. Plus, you can be a part of our live audience.
Normally early.
It's not this week. But you can be part of our live audience and participate in our semi-regular Guitar Nerds live episodes. At the $5 tier, you can enjoy an entire extra episode every week, plus access to our entire back catalogue of mini-series like The Question Hole, Bar Chords, and The Friday Specials. And at the $10 tier, you can become an executive producer and enjoy all these benefits, plus the prestigious honor of having your name featured in our podcast outro song. Follow us on all the major social media platforms at Guitar Nerds, and join our Facebook community on facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. Whew. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Here we go. Jeffrey Wax, Mario Turan, Brian Einsler, Gavin Van der Linden, Jacob McGee, Marcus Al, Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Robert Butterworth, Neil Milton, Rob Barstow, and Christian Lon Hansen, Keith Adams, and Eric Fern, Andrew Good, and Erin Peters, Richard Sutworth, and Jack. Rich, Rob Nordvik, Robin Smith, Steve Merkel, J.D. Short, Carlos Mancha, Brad Page, and Andy McKenzie, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, and Moo Gravitt. Like it's on.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.